Are you nervous?
No.
I am.
Aw. It really was, because a lot of times I would be in the hate part of the love-hate relationship. And then I would sort of rethink, wait, you know, if this is my work, shouldn't I be liking it more? Shouldn't I be enjoying it more? And although I was good at it, there was only a specific audience that I really enjoyed working with.
That's my guest, Cheryl Janis, talking about one of the common pains of being a generalist. Cheryl is an interior designer and my wife. I wanted to bring her on to talk about positioning because even though her business is pretty far towards the creative end of the professional services spectrum, she's got a lot of great experience to share about the emotional challenges of positioning yourself. It doesn't matter how technical your services are, you will have to deal with some nasty fears as you figure out how to position your business. And Cheryl's story really sheds some light on that part of the journey. I'm Philip Morgan, and this is the Consulting Pipeline Podcast, where we talk about building your consulting pipeline through positioning, education-based content marketing, and marketing automation. So, hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Philip.
Nice to see you. We share an office space, so we see each other every day.
Hello, handsome.
So, why don't you start by telling folks who you are and what you do?
My name is Cheryl Janis, and I am a healthcare interior designer for visionary healthcare practitioners who want to transform their unwelcoming space into a custom, exquisite healing environment.
Nice. So I want to help listeners understand where you are in the process of defining your business focus. And you're still kind of in that process, right?
Yes, I'm in the process of defining my business.
Or rather, it's something you did not long ago. So,
right, it's been about 3 or 4 months. So it's really new.
Yeah. So as of today, what audience or industry do you focus on?
I focus on independent healthcare physicians who work outside of the insurance of the current medical insurance reality.
Okay.
And who are visionary types.
Mm-hmm.
They embrace a whole health medicine philosophy.
Right.
And believe in the idea that the environment is important to facilitate healing and to create an experience that supports the work they do.
So, what kind of services do you offer them?
I am a full service interior design firm and studio. So I offer, you know, all the design services, and I specifically focus on how to create a healthcare setting that promotes positive outcomes for patients. Mm-hmm. So for example, when a patient walks into one of my clients' offices, they immediately will feel relaxed, less anxious about a procedure, and very welcomed simply by walking into the space, even before they talk to anybody. So it's the way the space is laid out, the furniture layout, the colors that are used on the wall, the wall decor or photography, the type of lighting, you know, the whatever, the music, the noise, the sound management. Lots of design elements are considered when I design spaces for patients.
Mm. So how do you differentiate yourself from other people who might be serving the same audience or the same type of client?
Sure. Well, unlike other healthcare interior designers, I use an experiential approach to design. Mm. I consider the patient's experience from the moment they walk through the door until the time they leave, and every step in between. Mm.
So unpack that a little bit. What does that mean to consider the experience first? I mean, how else would you do it?
Other interior designers look at the architectural features, and they don't consider the experience of the person who actually goes to the space. And this is quite important these days, when more and more people are taking charge of their own healing, nutrition, mm-hmm. and exercise programs, and they are looking for practitioners and physicians to partner with. Mm-hmm. And so this particular modality that I use is based on a few different design concepts. One of them is evidence-based design, which is working with a built environment based on calculated measurements or studies that have been done that prove to the world mm-hmm. that, for example, integrating nature into a space helps reduce pain, facilitates healing. Studies have shown that people spend less time in the hospital when they have views of nature versus a view of a brick wall. And I also take into consideration the psychological, the physiological, and the sociological aspects of an experience, place, mood, emotion, and also a few esoteric things. So also the spiritual aspects.
Mm-hmm. So other interior designers are kind of coming from a different place in their work, it sounds like.
Sure. In traditional interior design school, you're taught a certain language that revolves around more a traditional view of interior design, which focuses more, at least in the healthcare world, on how the way that the built environment can house medical equipment. Mm-hmm. And I know everybody can relate to feeling, to at least having one or a few experiences of going to the hospital or a medical doctor's office or the dentist, and it feels very clinical, cold, industrial, where the surfaces are hard and there's not a lot of comfortable seating and the walls are white and there's overhead lighting that is, you know, fluorescent and glaring and bright and mm-hmm. disruptive. And so there's a movement that's happening now that is focusing more on building the healthcare environment, including hospitals and clinics, with this sort of patient-centric approach, which is considering the, you know, what can we do in the environment as designers and architects that can create a better experience, mm-hmm. More positive outcomes, mm-hmm. in on so many levels. Mm.
So let's wind your story back to the point where you started, you know, doing this. How did you get started in business, or if that's too far back, how did you get started doing this kind of work?
Well, I've been designing holistic and integrative medical practices. Holistic medical practices are practices like acupuncture, massage therapy.
Okay.
Those kind of practices. I've been designing those types of businesses for about 12 years.
Okay.
And what I noticed, And I also was doing residential design, and what I kept noticing that I couldn't prove was how every single time after I would redesign, you know, a waiting room, a treatment room in one of my clients' spaces, how within 6 months their businesses would increase, word of mouth would spread, and patients and clients were delighted. They were more receptive to receiving treatment recommendations. Just their whole overall experience in the space was so much more positive, and word of mouth was spreading for my business. And so what sort of kicked me off to go a little bit further back, mm-hmm. I was designing residences, and I was in a car accident.
So what time period are we talking about here?
In 2010, I was in a car accident.
Okay.
I drove about 2 hours outside of Portland, Oregon, where I was living, and was working in the state of Washington on a dental practice. And on my way home from that dental practice, I was in the town of Astoria, and I didn't know a soul. And while I was stopped at a red light, a young kid was texting, and he was driving a truck, and he just didn't see me. He was texting, and I was stopped at the light behind a truck, and he slammed into me, and I became the sandwich that day.
Right.
Between the truck in front of me and the truck behind me. And now I had an old Mercedes, which took the brunt of the damage. And, you know, it was a totaled car.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know a soul. And my neck was injured and my body was injured and I was in shock and crying. And I took a cab to the 5 minutes. I said, oh, I'm fine. But then I took a cab to the emergency room. And when I went into the emergency room, you know, I was immediately hit with this cold, sterile environment.
Right.
And I was already feeling frightened and I didn't have anybody there to help me who I knew. And there was bright lights and hard surfaces and they put me into a windowless room and they, you know, put me into a neck brace. And anyway, there was a series of things that they do when you go to the emergency room. And it made me feel worse. And I, of course, as a designer, I'm thinking, you know, about all these different ways and things I can do in the space to make the experience better. And I really struggled. There was beeping noises and bright lights and it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that experience, I made a commitment to myself to really help and to really focus on medical practitioners who really need help with their environments.
So focus on them instead of
being more of a general interior designer.
Okay.
You know, before I was more general, I would do, if a restaurant called me, I'd say yes. If a holistic practice called me, I'd say yes. If a knee surgeon called me for some design, I would say yes. I would say yes to a home. You know, somebody who called me who needed help with their home. And they actually are quite different, even though they're all designed. They all have different focuses. And working with you on my positioning really has taken my business to a whole other level. And
okay.
It's exciting.
Cool. So let's unpack that middle part a little more. So you had experience, you had sort of, you know, credentials and or street cred as a designer, as someone who could, you know, come in and help you make a space more beautiful or more comfortable or whatever, right? And then you had this experience that gave you a heightened interest in helping one type of client. How long did it take, you know, between the car wreck and the emergency room and you saying, okay, I am only going to help this particular type of client?
About 4.5 years.
Okay. So it was a bit of a, even from that big, you know, kind of dramatic and awful emergency room experience, it took some time to develop into that focus, right?
Here's the thing. I did not understand why I was unhappy doing what I was doing.
Oh, interesting. Say more about that.
I was designing client homes and they were loving me and recommending me to their friends. And what I really received the most joy out of was helping owners of medical clinics, natural clinics. And these were all private healthcare practitioners.
Right.
Because of the results I was seeing. And there was something that really touched my heart and soul about working on spaces where I could facilitate healing and make life better for so many people. And so I simply had the story in my mind that I had to either be a generalist or do something different. And so I suffered depression from that. I had a love-hate relationship with my with my job. Mm-hmm. And then when I started working with you around creating a specialty and positioning myself differently, it was like a light bulb went off. Mm. And that light bulb was filled with joy and excitement. And you mean, really? I don't have to serve all these people? I can just serve the people that I want to? And I actually didn't even think about it before.
So was it, I'm trying to kind of get inside your thinking from that time when you were under the impression that the only way to do your business was to sort of take all comers, right? Anyone who,
right,
who wanted your services, did you feel like you owed it to them, or did you feel like there just wasn't any other choice, or how did that work back then?
I really felt like there wasn't any other choice because, you know, here I am receiving clients and the money's coming in and I need the money and I want the money. And I didn't realize that there was a better way. Hmm. I just didn't know.
Right. You spent a number of years in a sort of take all comers mode, working with a wide variety of clients, kind of operating as a generalist, and it was starting to really drag you down, right? That's what it sounds like.
It really was, because a lot of times I would be in the hate part of the love-hate relationship, and then I would sort of rethink, wait, you know, if this is my work, shouldn't I be liking it more? Shouldn't I be enjoying it more? And although I was good at it, there was only a specific audience that I really enjoyed working with, which were these healthcare practitioners.
Right. So I've heard you mention three distinct, we could call them an audience, or we could call them a type of client, or even an industry. You mentioned the natural health client, the more traditional medical client, and then the homeowner. And, well, I have some insider information here, so I know there's others too, like you've worked with retail, retailers.
Yes.
And then probably even restaurants as a fourth or fifth. I don't know what we're up to now.
Commercial spaces, office spaces.
And then offices. And I know you've even been asked to work on hotels and hospitality before. So, you know, you had these, I lost count there, but I think it was maybe six or so different industry verticals that you had worked with.
Yes.
How did you, was it just a purely an emotional kind of thing for you, or how did you arrive at which one of those you were going to focus on?
It was definitely a process, and it was really exciting for me because after I started studying with you, I just went to work on my own and mm-hmm. started really kind of diving into this idea of who am I serving? Who do I want to serve?
Right.
Out of these sort of categories that you've defined just right now.
Right.
And it took me a while because I actually had to live with each one for a little while and then go, no, wait.
So was that sort of a mental exercise where you just kind of, I don't know, let's say arbitrarily for a week, you thought about for some period of time, what if I just worked with restaurants, or what if I just worked with homeowners? Is that how you did it?
No, I knew from our first or second coaching session that mm-hmm. we had together that I wanted to work with healthcare practitioners.
Okay.
That was definitely super easy.
Right.
So I knew I could take off the table homeowners and restaurant owners and other kinds of commercial spaces that we discuss, retail spaces. And I knew that I wanted to work with healthcare practitioners, and for me, it was really important to write it down. Mm. And that's one of the things that Philip, that you taught me, was to write it down mm-hmm. and write it big on a piece of paper, or write it on your computer and print it out in large font.
Okay.
And kind of start living with that first draft of the positioning statement that I wanted and my differentiator.
Right.
And then sort of like when I'm out in the real world, talk about it with my friends and see how they respond. Mm-hmm. And if I'm meeting somebody for the first time, you know, use that and kind of see how they respond. And I actually did those things. And it was a really important part of the process.
Right.
Because some of them were kind of confused.
Okay. So you,
at first,
you had some pretty early on in the process clarity about which industry you were going to focus on. Early on, you're like, you had this, you know, this car wreck experience years ago. And so when you decided to focus on a single type of client, healthcare was the clear leader, the clear obvious choice.
Yeah, so much so that I can't believe I didn't think about it before. I mean, I think a lot of people, and me included, were under the impression that you have to like have the cookie jar be really, you know, wide and diverse so that you can receive a lot of clients, so that you can appeal to a range of different types of people. Uh-huh. And that wasn't really doing it for me. That wasn't lighting my fire. So when it, four and a half years later after my car accident, you know, I realized how much joy I was getting out of helping these healthcare practitioners. That part was really clear.
Okay.
That first step.
Okay.
That I narrowed down my audience. The first step of narrowing them down was super easy and super great. It felt great in my body.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Well, so I think I heard you say though that after that initial sort of burst of clarity, then you started trying to create a positioning statement, a way of telling people who you help and what you do for them and how you're different than others. And that's where you had to do a little bit of gradual refinement.
Yes. So I printed out the paper with my positioning statement and differentiator on it, and I memorized it, mm-hmm. even my first draft.
Right.
And I took that paper with me on my walks that I took every day. Uh-huh. And I said it out loud several times until I really got it. And then I simply used that. I simply had that kind of planted in my brain for a while.
Can I stop you? Did it feel weird to do that, to try to memorize something that you had written? This was not something somebody else wrote for you, but still, did it feel weird, like you were, you know, preparing for a, I don't know, did it just feel strange?
Like a wedding rehearsal or something?
Yeah, like you were rehearsing to be on stage, I guess is what I was trying to say.
No, it didn't. It felt a little weird, but there's something. See, I appreciate getting help for my business, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners do.
Sure.
And so I knew that I could benefit from it. And so I wanted to take the steps and really do the homework that you gave me. And okay. So for me personally, it was kind of, I enjoy that kind of challenge of,
okay.
I'm going to do something that feels a little bit uncomfortable, sometimes a lot uncomfortable. And right. I'm going to have some moments where there's a lot of fear. Oh my God, I'm saying no to, you know, clients that are giving me money, but they're not really people I want to work with. Right. And I said yes to that. So the first step was printing out this paper, writing the first positioning statement,
mm-hmm.
and differentiator. How am I different from other healthcare interior designers? And then memorizing it. And then taking that into the world, just giving myself sometimes a few days, sometimes a week, mm-hmm. to test it.
You're a solo business owner.
Yes.
You're free from the joy and the challenge of having employees.
Yes.
So how did you get feedback from the, you know, others on your first attempt at a positioning?
I actually just said it to whoever would listen to me.
nice.
Except for the grocery clerk.
You drew the line there.
I drew the line there. I actually, if I went out with friends, and a lot of my friends are, you know, small business owners, so it's helpful.
Yeah.
And I would come to you, luckily, because I had you here by my side a lot. And, you know, you would encourage me. And then, you know, I just would meet at that time, you know, I was meeting new people. And as I did, they would say, oh, what do you do?
Right.
And I would tell them what I did. And then I would.
So you would just recite the memorized positioning statement?
Sometimes I would recite it and sometimes I would have a short version of it.
Okay.
Because a lot of times, you know, if you're in a conversation, you kind of have to have a short version of it.
Right, right.
But some version of it, short or long, or sometimes I would do exactly the long version.
Yeah.
And I would see how people were reacting. And I was also, I think more importantly, the process helped me.
Oh, how so?
It helped me think and kind of get into my body at the body level and kind of at my soul level and my heart level. It helped me really feel into, okay, is this right?
Oh, right. Kind of that gut check.
That gut check, mm-hmm. Right. And so what ended up happening was my positioning statement has been revised about 3 or 4 times already. And the third or the fourth time has been it.
So you gave us the sort of current final, I mean, there's positioning statements are always, well, they're not always changing, but they're always being updated as you gain new experience. So at the top of this conversation, you gave us the current version. What, I think I saw you printing out the original version, or do you have that?
Yeah, I do.
Give us the two to sort so people can see the difference, the progress from one to the other.
So this is the current one. So you can hear the latest one, the one that I love, the one that really resonates with me. And understand that when I did my first positioning statement and differentiator, I thought that really resonated.
Okay.
Okay. So this is the one that I...
This is a 10
this is
for
today.
You right
this
now.
Is, this is a 10. Yeah. I help visionary healthcare practitioners transform unwelcoming spaces into exquisite custom healing environments.
Nice.
Unlike other healthcare interior designers, I use an experiential approach to design, considering your patient's experience from the moment they walk through your door until the time they leave and every step in between.
Very nice.
The first one I had went something like this. Now it's been sort of reworked, but kind of went like this. I help holistic healthcare practitioners unlock the healing power of their space. Unlike other healthcare interior designers, I use an integrative approach to design, drawing on evidence-based design, style, and design psychology, and Eastern principles such as yin-yang and the five elements theory.
So that first one has a couple big differences that jump out at me. It's kind of talking about the tools that you use a little more than the latest one, the one that really is working for you. It's talking about those tool sets that you draw on, and it seems really connected to, it seems like it's for a different audience. Sorry, different audience, is that?
Right. At first glance, you might not think that I changed that many words.
Right.
But it actually has a whole different feeling and meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this idea I think a lot of us have is that we have to show people in our positioning. We have to be really technical. We have to show them what our credentials are or what type of science we use. And really, people don't really care about that.
So why do you think your latest positioning, does it resonate better with your ideal client? And if so, why do you think that is?
It does resonate with my ideal clients better because it allows them to step into the experience of the solution that I provide.
Oh.
And the solution that I provide is that their patients will walk into their practice and every detail of their experience will have been considered.
And it kind of speaks to that problem that you experienced firsthand when you were in the ER.
Right.
And if it didn't come out of the story the first time around, they patched you up. They didn't screw anything up in the medical work, but the experience of being there was terrible for you. And you're talking, and that was the definition of an unwelcoming space, right?
Absolutely. The medical care was outstanding, I suppose.
I mean, it was adequate at least.
Yeah, it was at least adequate. It was a clean environment.
But you have a negative memory of being there.
It was so horrific because I'm in a different, I'm in a different city. I know nobody, and I'm already a sensitive person, but I know everybody can identify with being sick. At some point in their lives, everybody feels worse and more sensitive.
Right, like that you're kind of on your last nerve because you've been sick and you have to go to the doctor again, that kind
of
a thing.
Or you can start crying over nothing. Mm-hmm. You're in a lot of pain. And so, you know, bright lights, harsh lights, and white walls and no windows and feeling like in a tiny room, feeling claustrophobic and not really even knowing where you are, having a sense of the space you're in is quite terrifying. And I think it, you know, it terrifies children who are really sensitive. It can frighten elderly people. And even all of us, you know, in that age range in between, you know, we know what it's like to go to either a dentist's office or some kind of a surgery or another kind of treatment, where even acupuncture, where we have felt, you know, nervous about it.
Right.
And so.
So that's the problem you're helping with. And that's the problem you describe in your, well, you don't really elaborate on it, but you talk about unwelcoming spaces. That's the problem you solve.
Right. So the old positioning statement where I say, you know, my differentiator talks about the approaches that I use, the scientific approaches,
right,
which are evidence-based design and design psychology. It's kind of like in the Charlie Brown's teacher, when you hear her going, wah, 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 wah. That's kind of how I saw the look in my, when I was testing this out in the real world, I kind of saw this glazed over look in my friends or acquaintances' eyes when I would say that, because they don't understand that.
Right. Right. It's funny how quickly you can lose somebody when you stray from what you know they're going to care about. And not everybody is going to care about your positioning statement, but what's the effect now with this new positioning statement that really seems to be working for you now? I mean, not to lead the witness here, but do people remember what you do more easily? Do they tell their friends, hey, I know this person? You know, what's the effect that you're seeing?
They absolutely remember me more. I'm more memorable because what did I do? I described their problem. I described the solution to their problem, and I didn't get into any of the mumbo jumbo about it.
Right.
So they get, I also noticed that they're more interested in asking me questions after I say my positioning statement, like, oh, tell me more. Oh, really?
Oh.
Wow, that's so interesting. Instead of kind of just nodding their head, like, you know, not wanting to be rude.
So you knew you had a winner when you felt really right about it internally, and you were starting to get that kind of a reaction from people in the real world when you were testing it.
Right. And there's also this other piece of it really feeling right to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that's big for you.
So I think that maybe other people have gone through this. I don't think it's this easy thing to do, to go from a generalist to a specialist, but it is so worth it and rewarding and important. So it had to feel right to me as well.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, when I first started, I thought my audience was just holistic practitioners. Holistic meaning they practice holistic health. And then I decided, well, I think I'd like to work with integrative medical practitioners. Integrative medical practitioners are doctors and naturopathic physicians, for example, who believe in complementary alternative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay. And then I thought, well, you know, I also want to work with holistic practitioners. So am I getting too general now? Do I have to choose one? And I think I came back to you several times and said, oh, do I need to choose one? And you said, yes, you need to choose one. So I saw someone, I think I read Lissa Rankin's website.
Right.
And she is a medical doctor who left the reductionist system that's concurrently our...
Sort of like left mainstream medicine.
Right.
Okay.
And started her own practice. And she wrote some books, some great books on you know, approaching healing yourself.
Okay.
And she has a school where she teaches physicians how to practice and how to serve from this whole health perspective.
Okay.
Anyway, I saw the word visionary practitioners on there and I went, that's it.
Oh, I see. So just in your own process of, you know, researching this new focus, you came across the language that you needed to talk about what you do.
Right. I was always looking around and, you know, it's important to kind of sit with things and not just sit with them in your head, mm-hmm. but it was important for me to get it out on paper, to speak it out loud
yeah.
by myself and with other people.
Right.
And then it was also important for me to look at other people who were doing, or who at least who had the same audience or a similar audience, and see if there was a connection there and look at what they're talking about. And so when I saw her, when I read her website or a blog and she mentioned visionary practitioners, and I said, that's it. Those were the visionary healthcare practitioners are all those healthcare practitioners who I've worked with in the past, who've always wanted to push the envelope, who've always wanted to incorporate the latest trends and help their, always looking for ways to lead in their industry, looking for ways to lead their tribe, their staff, and their patients.
Does that mean they're more likely to be aware of the problem that you're solving?
Right. And they're going to be more open to working with me because they see that as a need.
I see. So let's kind of shift focus, and this is sounding pretty good. And I think in the interest of equal time, we should talk about how the ways in which it was challenging or difficult, or maybe those times when you say, crap, did I make a mistake by throwing to the side all those kind of clients I used to work with? Did that happen at all?
Yes, a lot.
Oh, okay. More than once.
Yes. It's normal from what I've heard.
Do tell.
So when I first started changing my positioning statement, I went through a period of a little bit of grief. Like, what am I doing? Especially at nighttime, because it's always worse at night. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that you kind of have a buddy when you're doing this, kind of like a workout buddy.
Right.
So you can either tell, you know, either a friend who's maybe doing it with you or a partner who's maybe doing it with you. And for me, you know, Philip is here. So clearly, you know, I would go to him and say, oh my God, am I making a mistake? Tell me the truth. And his reassurance, I have to admit, was one piece that helped me get through. Kind of like, you know, you're trying to diet, you're trying to lose weight, you know it's good for you, and you're struggling. You're like, I want that piece of bread, or I want that ice cream. And you call up a buddy and, you know, you work out together and they mm-hmm. calm you down and it, sort of thing. So
right.
It happened, but truthfully, I got through it. And it wasn't that long. I just had to trust and have, you know, good self-talk.
Well, okay, but we all have this little voice inside our head, I think, that speaks up from time to time and says things like, this is a mistake, you can't, this is not the way, you know, this is stupid, whatever. What was your little voice saying in those moments when you would doubt whether narrowing your focus was a good idea?
Well, I think it was fear of not... It's really fear of the unknown, and then it's fear of not having money, not having an income.
Making like a real dollars and cents business mistake.
Right, because at a certain point, and it wasn't right away, I was still working with residential clients for a while. And then I was so excited about this other stuff I was doing. At a certain point, I transitioned and said, okay, universe, no more, you know. So...
And you started turning down the clients who were outside that focus of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And of course there were scary. Of course there are moments of insecurity, as with anything new that you do. But I got through it, and I'm here, and I'm so happy that I did it, because honestly, it has changed my whole relationship with my business. For example, I used to write newsletters every week to people, and I would struggle writing them. I mean, struggle.
Right.
And I would be insecure about it. And there were just so many topics I could discuss. And I had like my holistic practitioners, those were my clients, and my residential clients kind of all grouped together.
Mm-hmm.
And so one week I'd talk about the holistic practice. Another week I'd talk about, you know, your home and what to, you know, different design
right.
ideas or how to, I was always interested in creating spaces that helped us live a better life and
right.
enjoy, have a better lifestyle and contribute to a higher quality of life. And now, and so I did it for a while, and then I, you know, they would go out in the morning, and I would have all this anxiety. Oh my God, my newsletter's going out. What
right.
are people going to think of me?
Right.
And it was really scary. And after a while, I just stopped writing them as often. And ever since I became clear on my positioning, meaning the last incarnation of of this new positioning,
right?
I'm now 3 months ahead.
What does that mean?
In my newsletters.
Oh, you have 3 months of newsletters written, sort of ready to go.
Ready to go.
Yeah,
and they're all based on stories and really interesting. Really interesting and important valuable information that
right.
I'm giving away.
Right.
And I get the best feedback on those. And I get the best open rate and like 50%.
Mm, nice.
And also the feedback has been really great. And so that piece is shocking to me.
Really? You were surprised?
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking, this has just happened in the last 3 or 4 months.
Right.
And, you know, I've been doing this work for 12 years.
Right.
So it's unbelievable. It's like once you get super clear on your positioning, it's like this, you know, Aladdin's lamp is suddenly rubbed.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you start connecting and you start just getting all these ideas. And it really is counterintuitive to what I thought would happen before, which was, oh my God, I can't specialize because I'm not going to have anything to talk about or I'm going to lose people.
Why do you think that happened? Why did that open some kind of new reservoir of, it sounds like creativity or new ideas?
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
You know, I think I really do believe it's kind of like clearing out your clutter. You know how when you live in your home and you have all this clutter around you and it's old boxes or old newspapers or stuff that it kind of keeps you held down by your past.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I finally was able to let go of the stuff in my business that I didn't really bring me joy and then I really actually disliked.
Right.
It kind of freed up space in my brain.
Mm.
And I suddenly became more creative. I mean, a creativity that I hadn't seen in years.
And you're talking specifically about more creative in your marketing efforts.
Yes.
More
in building relationships with my clients, in nurturing my leads.
Right.
You know, before it was painful. Now it's not painful anymore. It's clear. I know what I do. I have specific information to talk about it, and I have great information to bring to conversations. I have great things to give away. And this step-by-step process started with my positioning. Like, I couldn't do my new website without having my positioning because I'd have to redo it. And I actually had to redo it a few times, just a little bit of it, because I changed my positioning. So I had to change things
right.
on my social media and just different profiles in different places. But that's okay.
So I'm just trying to sympathize with my listeners here. And this sounds like one of those late night infomercials where it's too good. But wait, there's more.
No,
so
I mean,
can you kind of speak to that? That concern that, you know, Philip has just brought his wife on here to try to shill for him and convince people that positioning, I mean, Is all this stuff really real? Is there some downside that we haven't talked about?
Philip started his business, a few years ago, and he'd been doing his positioning and writing the positioning manual and doing lots of work with his clients and stuff. And I was not on board with it in the beginning. And I was just going along my way. I actually had a Squarespace site, meaning I had my website, which was a Squarespace.
It was hosted on Squarespace.
Yeah. And Philip had already moved his Squarespace site over to WordPress because there were all these, there were more plugins and all these technical things that you could do on there that helped your marketing. And so, you know, I sort of, you know, I was watching his process and I was absolutely a skeptic. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. And I can remember one day in December, I woke up and I just was feeling really down. And I wasn't happy with my job, meaning I wasn't happy with my clients.
The one you created for yourself.
The one I created for myself, because it just wasn't really fulfilling. And yeah. So I finally remember walking down the stairs and saying, okay, Philip, I'm ready. And so that's the thing, is that you have to be ready for this. You have to take it seriously. It's a commitment.
So how would people know that this is something that's going to help them? Because I'll be the first person to tell you that I don't think narrowing your focus is necessarily right for every single person out there. You have to, you know, start acting differently and kind of running your business differently to make it work. So it's not just a new coat of paint on your business. What advice would you give people around the question of, is this right for me and is it the right time?
Okay, so if you're running your business and you're not happy running your business, meaning you're not enjoying the work, you're not enjoying some of the clients you work with, and you have a wide variety of clients, types of clients, really a kind of a different demographics the way that I did.
Right.
And you're just like, you're either tired of it or something in your body is just not resonating with it. It's not bringing you the kind of joy that it used to bring you when you first were learning about it. You're exhausted. You know there's a better way. You've even considered quitting your work because you're like, you know what? I'm just going to stop this whole thing and do something totally different or get a job.
Right.
That's kind of your signal, or that you need to specialize, that, you know, your body and your mind and your gut are telling you, okay, there needs to be a change and I can't do this for very much longer. And the other scenario is, you know, if you're a service provider and you're just slaving away and you're charging an hourly rate and you're just kind of slaving away at it, meaning you really don't have a life. You know, you don't have balance. You don't have time for friends or family that much, or for self-care, which is what I didn't have, then by specializing it, for some reason, it kind of lightens your load. It's like by specifically focusing on a niche audience, it becomes lighter. The energy around it becomes lighter and you start enjoying it more. And so there are lots of challenges, believe me, and most of them are emotional.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where you go to sleep and you're worried. And, you know, I mean, that's where your practice of, you know, exercising and good nutrition and a meditation practice or yoga or whatever you do, that's when it's really important because that's also what helped me. And there's something, though, that something really magical that happens when you're going through these hard times and you just kind of, you know, you're doing your mental practice of, okay, I'm going to take this step by step, breathing. You get through it.
Yeah.
And that's what really surprised me a lot. And that's what is so exciting to me, because I continue to move into uncharted territory with my work and I continue to go through scary moments. But I get through them and then I'm like on the other side of it. And it's exciting and I'm meeting new people and something really magical happens. And, you know, I'm going to be 47 years old in August. And I've never really experienced this before in my entire adult life.
And you've been self-employed for how long?
20 years.
Yeah. I'm inspired. And And I did not put you up to this.
No.
But thanks for coming on and telling people what it's like from your perspective to go through this process. It's definitely a process, and it's full of highs and lows, it sounds like.
It is, but there are more highs. The lows, when you get through the lows, they stay gone. And then there might be some new challenges, but you're kind of, you level up.
The lows don't keep reoccurring in the same way.
Yeah, I kind of think of it as like playing a video game. And I'm from, you know, I grew up in the 80s. And so Pac-Man and Centipede were my favorite games.
Yeah.
And I would always get excited when I got to the next level.
Yeah.
And it's like you've done that level and you're at the next level. And yeah, there's more challenges on that next level. You can't get eaten by the little fruit that goes by on Pac-Man. But then you get like extra points and it's fun.
Yeah.
And you're doing great work. You're doing something you love and you're getting paid for it. And so things just kind of fall into place. And I know that, and I am not, you know, making this up, but I really believe so much in having a positioning statement and a differentiator so that you can really take it to the next level.
Well, thanks again. Where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
You can find me on my website, which is Cheryl Janis Designs with an S at the end .com and a CHERYLJANIS Designs, DESIGNS.com. And you can also find me on Twitter. And my username on Twitter is Cheryl_Janis. And please do reach out because I always love sharing my process. And if I can give you any helpful advice or any support to get you to do this or to get you to the next level, I'm happy to do so. Thank you, Philip.
Thanks, Cheryl. That's it for this episode of the Consulting Pipeline Podcast. Thanks to my guest, Cheryl Janis. Again, you can find Cheryl online at CherylJanisDesigns.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at ConsultingPipelinePodcast.com. I'm Philip Morgan, and I hope to see you again next time.